ina nguvu, mimi ni chuma. Nina nguvu, mimi ni chuma. Nina nguvu, mimi ni chuma.
Hi everybody, this is Mark Chaffardini. Thank you so much for coming back to the podcast. We're pretty thrilled. We're excited beyond belief to speak to our next guest. Director, writer, producer, animation superhero, Miguel Ortega. He has a fantastic short film called A Voice in the Hollow, which won its category at the Atlanta Sci-Fi Film Festival this year. Joining me is Miguel, as well as Amanda Ray, who runs said awesome sci-fi film festival. So Miguel, thanks for being on the show. Amanda, you as well. How's things in your world?
I'm very well. Thank you so much. And thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. And we've been trying to do this for a while, so it's good to finally make it happen. Everything's going well. Everything's been pretty hectic, but the good kind of hectic. So yeah, very good. Thank you.
I was watching Creed 3 earlier this year, and there's this great line, and it says, the higher you get, the harder it gets. So like, just because you've reached a level of achievement and you've gotten some notoriety or pats on the back, it's like, I should just be coasting. No, the hill just gets higher and the clouds are farther away. So how has this process been for you? I have to say it's a phenomenal feature. Glad to be including it in part of the festival, and so glad it won. But how's things been since the fest?
It's been pretty crazy. You know, when we made this film, we had like a string of bad luck. We had done a feature film, which was all live action, called The Ningyo. It was like a Edwardian cryptozoology film, kind of like Indiana Jones, but the whole thing was that it was supposed to be about cryptids, which are, you know, the cheesy versions of the cryptid are like the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot. And we had that picked up, and we got it picked up by an awesome company. And then during COVID, the whole project just died. And we thought, like, we put 4 years into that short film. So when it died, we were just distraught beyond belief. And then we put a year on top of that to try to get the movie, the script made and everything. And we just spent half a decade trying to get this thing made. And when it died, we were so distraught that The Voice in the Hollow is basically a reaction to where we were at mentally. That's why it's kind of so dark. We were just like, oh my God, everything is going so bad for us. So yeah, so we were in a pretty dark place after the fall of that project. So we really were like, Tran and I teach at a school called Noman School of Visual Effects, and they were like, listen, why don't you guys try to do something, this animation, and we'll help you finance it. And the owner of the school is a friend of ours, and he's an amazing dude, as Alex Alvarez, and he gave us a very small. Not a small amount. I don't want to say it's a small amount of money, but for what a 10-minute animated film should cost, it's very small. And the majority of it is done by just Tran and I. So we ended up just using that money to get motion capture gear for the most part. And then hiring a few people to help us out on it. And anyway, we ended up doing what we thought was the most uncommercial thing that we could possibly make. You know, you don't do a film where it's in Swahili, everyone dies, there's nudity that's as bleak as it can get when you have commercial prospects of turning this into anything else. And, you know, the funny thing is that that's the way life works, is when you do something that you truly just do it for the love of it, that's when the success strikes. And, you know, we won the jury award at SIGGRAPH, which is one of the biggest animation events. We got called by like the creators of South Park. We got to meet them. We got to hang out with them and watch them direct an episode of South Park. And they're the coolest guys on the planet. So we just had all this stuff come in. Unreal Engine really came in, which is the software we use. They came in and they started really backing us up, and they were like, hey, what are you guys doing next? And we said, we're working on this other short film, we're doing it in Unreal. They gave us a grant for that project. And then Dan Lin has a writing program called Ride Back Rise, which gives grants to people of color to work on their films. And he came in, they saw The Voice in the Hollow, same thing. They gave us a grant to work on the thing we're working on now. And The Voice in the Hollow was picked up, I can't say publicly by who yet, but it got purchased by an amazing production company with as amazing a producer as you could possibly imagine, but we just can't announce it yet. But just funny. So basically, it's just been madness ever since that. We've flown to France for Annecy, where we got invited to that. Just madness, madness. As you can see, just by how hard it's been to get us in this interview.
Well, I know you can't say who it is, but what was it purchased for? Is it to turn it into a feature? Is it for more distribution? Can you give
no,
us?
No, it's to turn it. It's to turn it into a feature.
Okay.
So it's being turned into a feature right now. We are working on the script at this stage because, you know, we obviously, if you've seen the film, the ending isn't the easiest ending to say, how do we make a bigger film out of this, right? It ends as bleak as can be. But we found a pretty cool solution to it, a cool answer that wasn't forced. Once we thought of it, we were like, oh, that would be pretty cool. So yeah, it's going to be a feature. It's pretty exciting. You know, a lot can still happen. We've been through this before. So, you know, we have our fingers crossed. And I think that the big thing that we're doing this time that we didn't do on our last film, and this is something I recommend to any filmmaker that is in this position, is just because you have your film optioned or purchased, which is what happened on The Voice in the Hollow, you have to keep moving and work on the next thing, right? These things move slower than molasses and nothing could come out of it. So you have to be like, okay, cool, great. You moved up from white belt to the next belt. But if you just sit there waiting, you're going to get punched in the face by reality and you'll get knocked out. So we're already working on our next project, our next proof of concept, basically.
That's great. You know, the last thing you said, it sounds like you should learn on film school day one.
Yeah.
Keep moving, otherwise you're going to get punched in your face. Wow, that'll shock anybody to the system.
Yeah.
You know, it broken down to its essentials, it's really, I would say I always hate to make a filmmaker out to be like another filmmaker, but it seems like, specifically about the ending, it has a very Twilight Zone ending. Just like, you know, be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. So I love that level of detail. But I also love how compact it is. You know, it's basically about sisters and, you know, trying to, you know, one sister wants the father's love and affection, but she also wants something that she's not ready for. So it's this like overreaching. So it's very human, very relatable, even at a universal level. So how did those themes come into crafting Koa and Allah and Baba?
Totally. That's a good question. So when we were doing the previous film, I'll call it my heartbreak film, the Ningyo, some of the shots we shot in this cavern in Northern California, and it was called the Moaning Cave Cavern. And we had it for like 5 hours. We're like, you have this place. And they said, if for 5 hours, just go down to the bottom and do your thing. And I thought nothing of it. Oh, cool name, Moaning Cave Cavern. Cool. Get down to the bottom. It's a 250-foot drop to the bottom of this cavern. And when we're down there, the location manager says, hey, whatever you do, don't go over to that area over there because that's where all the skeletons are. So I have nightmares of claustrophobia. Like I have terrible claustrophobia. So I'm already freaking out that I'm down there. Not just that, but we turned off all the lights. So we're just using like a gas lantern, which is making it a level of darkness that you've never experienced, right? While you're alive. Even when you close your eyes, there's still some sort of ambient light, total darkness. So immediately I'm like, wait a minute, what do you mean skeletons? And she goes, yeah, the reason why this is called the Moaning Cave Cavern is because going back centuries, people would report Native Americans, local Californians that moved in, miners, blah, 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 that they would hear the voice of a little girl calling from this opening. This opening is in the top of a hill. Think like a little volcano, like an 8-foot volcano with an opening right on the top, like almost cartoony. and they would hear the voice of a little girl calling. So they would think she fell 8 feet to her death. Sorry, that she fell 8 feet into this cave. And when they would approach this cave, they would slip, think again, like a volcano, they would slip in. And they, I guess they weren't that careful because they just thought, oh, it's 8 feet and there's someone in there alive. How bad could it be? Anyway, it was a 250-foot drop to the bottom. And when they excavated this cave in the turn of the century, they find a dozen or so bodies, one on top of another. And at the bottom of the pile, what do you think is there? A 10,000-year-old skeleton of a little girl who had Paleo-Indian. So it's thought that she had crossed through the Bering Strait, then came down through Alaska, California, you know, the entire West Coast, and she ended up in this hole and she fell to her death. And I was so fascinated by this, right? And it just stuck in the back of my head. I'm like, wow, whether or not you believe in evil, the devil, or any of this stuff, this thing was a natural human spider web that used our emotions to bring us in there and kill us, right? And I just thought, wow, that's like pure evil. Just raw, you know, evil. And I loved it. So immediately I was like, oh man, we got to do something with that. And we went all over the place with this. How do we come up with a story around that? And one of the ideas we had was to tell a live action film about a comic book artist. And the comic book that she writes was called A Voice in the Hollow. When our producer, the guy that came to us in our state of depression and said, hey, why don't you guys do an animated film? What do you have? Well, we knew we couldn't do the whole feature. And by the way, that's not the feature that we're doing with this. But we were like, we have this little short. We could probably do that. And that's how it came to be. We were like, let's do that. How did this first happen? How did this first girl fall into the hole? Let's go to the origin of that fall. And then we were like, well, if it's an origin story, let's not make it a National Geographic history on a hole in California. Let's just make it a story about an evil hole. Well, if it's an origin story, let's go back to Africa. That would be the thing. And if we're going back to the very beginning, let's do like a Cain and Abel story. And then let's make it about two sisters. It was never like, oh, let's do it because we're trying to put, you know, a lot of people hate where you're. We've gotten a lot of comments like, oh, you changed it from Cain and Abel to two sisters because of you're trying to do some sort of messaging. And it wasn't. We just thought it would be cooler. And especially because the skeleton that found at the bottom of the hole was that of a girl. That was really the only reason. And that's basically it. So we just went with that, and we just thought, you know, when I was growing up, part of the reason why I got into horror films and doing monsters, because I've done monsters for movies for 17 years. So I've done the monsters on Godzilla, Krampus, the Marvel movies like Thor. So I've done a bunch of that. And all of that came from being a little kid. My parents grew up Christian. And one of the things, they didn't allow me to do two things, watch He-Man or draw anything that looked like demons, or listen to rock and roll. So of course I became a drummer of a heavy metal band and I became a monster creator. So of course, whatever you tell your kids not to do, you just guarantee that that's what they're going to do. So the Cain and Abel story was something that I always liked. I always thought it was cool, but I always felt like, you know, when you actually read it, Cain is giving an offering. It's not like he was out there hanging out, trying to find girls that didn't exist yet. He was doing his offering. And God was like, nah, not good enough, right? And I was like, damn, that sucks. Like the God is the father, right? God is the one in our Canaan and our Koa and Allah story that is the one that just never thought that that Koa was good enough. And I thought that was much more interesting, that it wasn't just as black and white, like Cain is a bad guy. And then I also thought, if he really was the favorite son, probably was a little shithead, right? He was probably like, I'm the favorite one and you're number two or whatever. And I was like, what if he just one day just really pushed him and he just snapped and threw a rock telling him to get away, and he accidentally killed him. And that's kind of how we come up with this. We just kind of grab all this stuff and mix it up together and grab this and that, and it's kind of hip hop in a way. You're grabbing all these different beats from different songs and different fables and shoving them in together and making this thing. So yeah, that's a long-winded reply.
Well, don't worry about it. You know, I'm so glad you said that, because there's a part where Allah is throwing spears, and when she walks back, she's got this kind of swagger, and it's a way of telegraphing that she is, you know, she is capable, but she also thinks she's a badass. So a lot like Miles Morales leaving his shoelaces untied in Across the Spider-Verse, where he goes, "It's a choice. It's a choice that you made." And I think those little like pearls find themselves in this narrative thread that make it so impacting, and the depth is tremendous. So
yeah,
that's not really a question there.
Thank you. Yeah, we definitely wanted to make sure that the main thing with Ala was always show that she never misses a shot and Koa never gets a shot. In the entire film, Koa never meant to kill her sister, ever. She threw it thinking there's no way I'm gonna hit her. And that's why we made it a point that she has her back turned. So she threw it even more carelessly than when she actually was trying. And she's trying during the whole film when they're chasing the anteater, when she's trying to hit the rock anteater. She never, ever gets a hit. So she never thought she was going to succeed. And Ala, had she not been arrogant, she would have seen the spear coming. She had her eyes closed and she was laughing as she threw the spear.
People in the theater was just in love with your film. And it was such a treat to see it on the big screen. It was just so well done and so beautiful. It really transported you into the story. So you did a great job with the, you know, with the layout, and everything about it was just perfect. And everyone kept talking about the film a lot. So I can't wait to, you know, let everybody know, you know, the next coming thing that's going to happen with it. But I do have one quick question. How hard or easy was it to find to do the voices, the actors that you did for the voiceovers?
Oh man, that was so hard, Amanda. I knew that I wanted it done in the proper tongue. I wanted it done in some sort of African tongue. And the first thing I did is I was like, okay, this is going to be difficult. So which is the most spoken? That way it would be easier to cast it. Right. Not necessarily because Swahili was the one that I wanted in particular, because Swahili comes from Arabic. So I almost wanted something that even predates that. I wanted something that went even older. But I was like, okay, this is already going to be hard enough. Let's not get crazy here. Mm-hmm. I knew that I couldn't go to any part of Africa to actually cast this. So this had to be done. Remember, this is COVID days. So I was like, I had to do this all online. First thing we did is do a casting in LA with the silly thought that I was just going to, that this was going to be easy peasy. Forget it. Nobody knew it.
Not in
or
LA.
They didn't speak it well, or they just didn't reply to this. Because mm-hmm. one thing to note is cinema is 133 years old. They have never made an animated African horror film ever, right? So when you see the postings for this, that, you know, a lot of people probably were like, eh, whatever. And they just, whatever it was, we didn't get anyone in LA. So, oh my God, what the hell are we going to do? So let's try doing it in English. Started getting some readings in English, and it broke my heart. I don't know if I was projecting, but I could hear their Instagram account in their voices, right? I just was like, I felt California, and I was like, no, this is not what I want. Right. I want to be so respectful of the culture, which is, this is a love letter to African culture. I think it's such a beautiful thing. So I wanted it done right. Okay, so let's hit up all the talent agencies in Africa, you know, and when I mean all Africa, I'm talking every place, right? We were hitting Tanzania, Nigeria, Kenya. Nobody replied to us. So I freaked out. I'm like, what the hell are we going to do? Are we going to have to go with this English route? And what I ended up doing was looking for audiobook translators on Fiverr, of all places.
Ooh, that's smart.
It was kind of, but I was freaking out at first. Like, I was actually a little bit embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God, you're going to do your casting on Fiverr? And what I found is an abundance of amazingness there. And they didn't just do the voices. They translated everything phonetically so that I could understand what the hell I'm, because, you know, spoiler alert, this guy from Colombia does not speak Swahili. So they had to translate it phonetically. And then also tell me, like, this word in your English script does not exist, right? There was no dam. There was no, there was little things like the word Baba means father. But if you're calling for help, even though you're calling for your father, you would say Mama.
Ooh.
So things like that, where I was like, oh, wait, we have to break the rules here, because if all of a sudden she calls for Mama, anybody that doesn't know that would be like, why the hell is she calling for her mom? Where the hell was the mom? So things like that, they were they're amazing. And they were not actors, though. So we had to do this. The first thing was like, hey, we're going to do this. Tell your boyfriend to wait outside. Because remember, they're not actors. So I'm like, no friends in the room. They're doing this all through Zoom. And we're recording this. And they, you know, it took them a while to get it because they're not actors. I would do way worse than they were. And what was funny is when they finally cracked it, when they finally did it, they would start laughing right away. And I was like, don't laugh. You totally nailed it. And then once they started building their own confidence, they just crushed it. And they did an amazing job. Koa was in Tanzania. Ala was in Kenya. And Baba was in Nigeria, which they don't normally speak Swahili, but he was originally from Kenya and was living in Nigeria. So, a blessing. It was a blessing, and we couldn't have been more happy.
Wow. If you ever do need anybody, not that I know a whole lot of folks, but I do know a few people in a few different countries, and I have another director that's in Estonia, and he has been shooting films in Ethiopia with a lot of Ethiopian actors. He physically goes there, so he's met a lot of actors and people there. He uses the same crew, so he has a good, you know, number of folks. And then I have friends in Johannesburg and Cape Town. So yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to go. Besides the feature version of this, I just liked that the world that we were building, and I was like, oh my god, what about this story? What about that story? So yeah, definitely, we're going back. To African stories at one point, I'm certain. So yeah, thank you.
Well, yeah. I have to say that one of my favorite parts of the film, and I think it's because you, for whatever reason, I never put the Cain and Abel together, but there's a part where Baba tells Ala, do not bask in your sister's failures, which I thought was like almost like a biblical way of speaking. And I love that. I think that is actually, aside from the ending, my favorite part of the film. And so you've told some really great experiences about the film, but do you have a favorite part? What are you happiest that came together? Whether it was a shot.
My favorite part, without a doubt, is I wanted to make sure that the death scene was done correctly with a lot of emotion. And that moment for me, when she's crying, to me, I find to be the best thing, because I was proud of our actors. I was like, shit, man, you guys crushed it. Like, you know, they're doing amazing. I loved that you felt like a gut punch there, and the atmosphere, the music, the silence, and then the single horn at the end, to me, and then the silhouette of the horns in the background, like that's Lucifer. I just loved that part. So I was super proud of that. When we first saw that, I was like, oh shit, we actually have something here. So that's my favorite for sure.
I have a quick question I want to throw out. And I know you can't talk about anything that you're going to do in the future with this film, but were there things that you weren't able to do this time around that you are excited to be able to do now, you know, later with the feature?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I just want to get into like the leopard tribe as a whole, like the hunters. Mm-hmm. Where's the mother? Why is there no other women hunters except for Ala? Is that somehow connected to something that happened to the mother? There's mm-hmm. so much that we could do what is that demon? There's we started going into like African lore to find what could be this sort of trickster thing. Because one of the things you guys mentioned is like the Twilight Zone thing. There's a demon, which the name I'm going to pronounce incorrectly because it involves a clicking sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pronounce it in, you know, dumb way, which is the Ikagen. And it's kind of like a Loki character, which lies. And the more it lies or the more it makes you lie, the stronger it gets. So I think I want to get into that stuff and get more into the mythology of these leopard masks, which are actually, those masks do exist, but they're usually made out of bronze. But I want to get more into that. So there's just so much. I do know that I still want to keep the story very personal. I don't want it to be so big that it becomes like a, you know, the Avengers and there's a giant battle happening mm-hmm. against. Yeah, I like how intimate it is. I find these stories, you know, I always say that I find more drama in a mother duck crossing the street with her ducklings than in a blue laser shooting up from Manhattan.
Yeah, right? I love it.
So I'd still want to keep it pretty tight and personal.
Well, you know, I was I'm really enamored with, again, the depth of it, because what you do is you create some texture with the sort of scratches on the film, and then you have the characters who are out of focus. And even when you do the graphics or the type font on the screen, it's sort of half behind a character. So it just, you know, it adds intrigue and depth so that it makes it feel bigger. But were there certain decisions you made that you knew because it was going to be short, it would work better in this format versus when you were talking about having the grander designs about like the comic book and the, you know, at the beginning of the interview, is there anything that went into the,
No, not at all. All the stuff you mentioned, like the typography, the scratches, during COVID, I became obsessed with Westerns, which are my favorite genre, actually. That's what I enjoy watching the most. And in particular, like the Italian Westerns, like Sergio Corbucci, who influenced Tarantino to do Django. And in particular, this one movie called The Great Silence, which if you've never seen, I highly recommend, because it, at the time, it broke every rule of a Western. It was all in the snow, which is something you never saw in a Western.
Yeah.
Inspired The Hateful Eight. The love interest was black. Instead of like the blonde damsel in distress, she's badass. And the ending is one of the bleakest freaking endings I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, holy crap, you could end the movie like this. So the look that I was trying to go for with the grain and the typography was to try to hit those movies from the late 60s and the 70s. And we never were looking at animation for influence, which I love animation. So it's not that I was looking down on it, but the big influences were the spaghetti Westerns, hence the standoff at the end around the circle, good, the bad, and the ugly. Instead of the pistols, it's the spears, but it's that sort of vibe to it. And the typography is definitely from that era. You could see that we faked like the MPAA, logo and the type of stuff that you would see in the beginning of a movie, that's totally stole. Even the color, that yellow color, is taken from a lot of movies from that era. But again, we never thought, because of a short or not a short, it was the only rule we ever think of is, do we sincerely love it? Do we want to see it? The moment you start thinking about what works for a feature or not, I think you just kind of limit yourself. Just be like, what do I want to see? If I die tomorrow, well, what am I going to leave? And this is it. This is what we wanted to leave. Another big influence was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. That was one. I love the look of that movie. Not, you know, I love the horror component of it, but the look of it, like you're like, oh man, it feels like 16 millimeter, which almost, not almost, it absolutely adds to the creepiness of it. It almost feels like a lost home video, right? From when we were growing up and you would see these movies from your family. So that was a big one, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Great Silence. And Apocalypto, I think, had a big one as well, which is more modern, but yeah.
Oh, the Mel Gibson Apocalypto.
Freaking amazing movie. I mean, think about it. Holy crap, they did it in the proper tongue. It is not a Hollywood film. Like, that movie is a freaking miracle. You know, Mel Gibson being Mel Gibson aside, holy crap, how did this movie get made?
Well, Miguel, we had so,
oh, sorry.
I was going to say, well, we had so much fun with you, but Amanda, why don't you bring us home? Why don't you ask, what's the last thing on your mind? What do you want to pick his brain
last
about?
Thing on mine I was thinking about earlier when you were talking about the two sisters. One question that was kind of in the back of my brain, or just one comment, I guess. I, even though I know you were working within parameters in terms of the script, because from where you started, the, you know, in flipping it to be Cain and Abel but women, it opens up some thoughts about, you know, sibling relationships, especially women, and especially you know, Black women or African women, in terms of, like, you know, a lot of times we have a lot of sibling rivalry, and especially with girls competing, things like that. And, you know, there, I find that sometimes sisters aren't as close as they need to be. And I love that, you know, their father was just being a great parent by telling them, yeah, you don't bask in your sister's, you know, failures or anything like that. You don't do that. But that was him teaching them and putting that foundation, because some parents don't do that. And they unfortunately are watching when the girls are at odds and not supporting one another, and they don't step in to teach them, no, it ain't about your friends and nobody else. You're supposed to have your sisters back as the two of y'all. Y'all are supposed to be tight as thieves. And so they can grow up like that as women and still have their back. And that part I felt was really, really important and very strong. So, you know, leaning into that, or, you know, you already did it. So, you know, I would love to see more of that, because I think that that, you know, is very relatable. In the fact that, like I said, the father actually was trying to make sure that his sisters are not always competitive. It also reminds me of Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy and her sister.
Sure.
Her
That's a good
name.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. Comparing them two, because, you know, Thanos, he didn't care. He didn't care that they were going at each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Fun.
They were just left to fight.
Yeah.
And
it's funny. I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, as a woman and as a Black woman, that stood out for me.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't, my sister was a lot older than me by 7 years. So we didn't have that same kind of, you know, rivalry comparison, because I was so much younger. But if I did have a sister closer to my age, I would think I would love to be really close, but you never know. It really depends, because they do start to get jealous of one another and fight. But if you don't have someone there teaching them, that's just going to grow, and they're going to, those seeds are going to start, that animosity is going to start at a young age, and they'll be 50 years old still dealing with it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I can't speak as a Black woman, but I know that this is something that I felt as a Hispanic man, and also Tran Ma felt the same as an Asian woman with her sister, who passed, by the way, right? That was another big factor in the writing of the film. Was she passed like 6 months before we started writing it, and you know, so there was that as well. But there was definitely a sense of rivalry on both, on, you know, I felt it, and I think ultimately that's just a universal, just a human thing. Yeah, you know, the way in terms of the father, I think he noticed it, but I think he noticed it too late. One of the things that was very important for us is that ultimately it was nobody's fault. It was everybody's fault. Had the father listened to Koa and just went when she was calling, nothing would have happened. Had Allah just gone and say, hey, dad wants to take you hunting with us, Koa would have been so happy. She would have gotten up. Nothing would have happened. If Koa wouldn't have thrown the spear, nothing would have happened. It's all their fault. And I kind of saw that a little bit, like the father's a little bit aloof, and like my father's a little bit aloof, and because men tend to be a little bit aloof, we're just up in the clouds somewhere. Bless our stupidity, but we're in the clouds sometimes, and we sometimes don't notice it. I know my father wouldn't notice it until it became too late in this story. But yeah, Yeah.
There's so many good nuggets.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good nuggets in there.
But I love that you connected with it. We had someone wrote to us who had a he had a hard time adopting he had a hard time having a child. And it's an Asian couple, and they had a hard time having a child. And they ended up realizing, like, we're going to have to adopt in order to have a kid. And they adopted a blonde, blue-eyed kid, right? Which totally didn't look like them. And, you know, the way life is, the minute that kid comes home, boom, you're pregnant, right? And they ended up having another son, Asian boy, and there was a rivalry between the two of them, and him as a father, who this guy is the greatest guy. I know him. I've known him for many years. He's like a stand-up guy, started freaking out about the rivalry that would happen between the two of them and words that would be said when they would fight, because one of them clearly does not look like the other. And he wrote to me, he's like, your film really freaked me out, because this is kind of what I'm going through. And this is like my worst nightmare come to life. Yeah. And you know that he's an Asian guy. I experienced that as a Hispanic guy, my fiance as an Asian woman, and you as a Black woman. I just think that's just humanity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But it has a lot of uniqueness in, you know, in terms of the relationship with the sibling, the two girls and their rivalry. And totally. Then, like you said, it's an African horror, which, yeah, I didn't realize you said it. I was like, we've never had an oh wow, that's
not an animation. No,
no, no, that's that. Yeah, there's a good mix of different things in there that makes this film so perfect. So I'm just really proud that we got a chance to show your film. Definitely thanks to Greg. I will definitely give Greg a shout out for sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Because Greg is he knows so many different animators and different folks around the world as well. But I was just really thrilled to see your film and share it, you know, at the theater. So we're here to assist you in any way possible to help promote the feature when it comes out. So definitely keep us in mind, if not this year, then next year, whenever. It actually doesn't have to link up with the festival. We're here to help promote
we'll figure it out for
we
sure.
Can. Yes, for
absolutely.
Sure.
And Greg is a great guy. He's actually the guy that's pretty much responsible for all this, because we were working at the same company and I was doing visual effects and he's a visual effects artist, but he just that I got there and he's like, oh, I just got my movie into Cannes. And I was like, what do you mean your movie? And then he showed me his short film and I was like, I want to do that. I don't want to be doing someone else's ideas. I want to do my thing. And mm-hmm. Greg completely was the one that made me say, I want to do my own stuff. So definitely a shout out to Greg. And thank you guys so much for having our film. And I will definitely let you guys know when it's time to take it to the next stage and play the feature over there if everything goes as planned. And I hope my answers weren't too rambly. I do ramble, but it's just because I have a bunch of different stuff to say. So, yeah.
No, no, that was perfect. I can't imagine you having to cram all of those answers all into into a few sentences.
Yeah. Well, Miguel, I think even though, like you said, these things take time and they move like molasses, you're still taking great strides, big steps. So when they do land, they're going to make an impact a lot like this short did. So thanks so much for spending some time with us. Please, best of luck. Have a happy new year, happy holidays, and we'll be in touch.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Happy holidays. And I hope everybody that's listening watches the film and enjoys it. And if they do, leave us a message on YouTube or Vimeo. We read every single one of the comments and we appreciate it when people like it or don't like it or whatever. So thank you guys so much and have a good day.
Welcome.
Take it easy.